This is Geno Smith of the Las Vegas Raiders, and you're listening to JT the Brick on Raider Nation Radio.
It's the JT the Brick Show.
If you're in a relentless pursuit of finding the competitive edge in everything you're doing, you got
to
be on.
100%. I expect to win every time I come on the field. I don't care what we're doing. You know what I mean? It's every drill, everything we do. I'm expecting to win.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
This is going to be a battle. This is going to be physical. This is going to be old school football.
Yes, sir. As a great man once said, just win, baby.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Hour number two of the show from Lotus Broadcasting, Raider Nation Radio, and on the Raiders mobile app. You just click on the radio in the upper right corner and you get the show anywhere in the world, and we are putting our lineup together. Mark Anderson remains in our lineup. He's one of the most honest, transparent journalists out there. He covers the Raiders for the AP and several other sports leagues. And Mark, let's get right to it. The secondary and the linebackers in the middle of the field. Do you believe that there's any progress there that you're seeing, or is there a potential problem here going into the regular season?
Yeah, I think the corners in particular, I'm really concerned about. I don't know how good the coaches feel about going into the season with those corners. I actually feel pretty decent about the safeties. I think Jeremy Chinn has shown a lot of good stuff. And, you know, obviously had the interception in the second preseason game, so. And I think the linebacker is going to be okay. I do. I don't know that they're going to be what the Raiders had last season. I think the Raiders will take a little bit of a step back. But I think they'll be okay.
So with the secondary, do you think the Raiders can clean it up with what they have, or do you think they'll be interested, John Spytek, if he sees a good player or a veteran become available in the next 10 days?
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, because you never know who's going to be able to go. And so I can definitely see him really – checking the waiver wire to see who's out there. I wouldn't be a big surprise by that. I also do think they want to see those two young corners, Kelly and Porter, how they do. And I think both of them have a high upside. I'm not sure they're necessarily ready for this year. Mm. But I do think I can see in 3 or 4 years they're really good. So I think the management's probably also curious about how they would hold up in a real game. But it's a lot to ask for such young players.
Mark Anderson's our guest. I think it's important here. Tyree Wilson is playing better than I saw him play last preseason. And then, you know, he did some good things in the second half of the season. I think this is a good opportunity for him now because there's not a lot of spaces open for him, Mark. He's not going to take Max Crosby off the field and Malcolm Kuntz unless there's a nick or an injury there. And Adam Butler is going to get most of the snaps as one of the defensive tackles. So he's only going to have limited snaps unless they put in a NASCAR package, they rush five. What do you see with Tyree Wilson from being around the coaches and him and his progress?
I agree with everything you just said. I think he's got a role where he can be really effective. The problem is, it's, you know, you don't draft someone that high. And I know it's not obviously the current management that drafted him, but still he came in as a really high draft pick. And if he's really going to be a role player, that's, you know, there's obviously a big miss there. But for what they're asking him to do, I think he could do really well. And I have liked a lot of what I've seen this year. And maybe there is pressure off him now, and he can go and be closer to the kind of player they thought they were getting. I just don't know that he'll ever really get there, though.
Mark Anderson joins us. Do you think there's a chance that Jaxon Powers-Johnson could lose his job to Alex Kappa?
I just don't see it. I know Cap is going to get a long look once he gets back, but I just, unless the coaches are just that down on JPJ, and maybe they are, you know, maybe that's why they moved him out of the center spot. They're just not real impressed with him, and it's possible. But I keep thinking he's going to be a starter somewhere in the line, you know, right at that right guard especially. And Kappa, you know, has a lot to prove on his end too. So I think when it comes down to it, I think JPJ is going to be a starter. But I think there's something that's, I just don't think the coaches have really completely bought into him. Otherwise, I think he'd be the starting center instead.
Yeah, same here. I thought Geno looked pretty good. The protection was good. The ball came out fast. What'd you think of the protection and Geno handling that first team of reps there with Bowers?
Yeah, I thought the offensive line played a lot better this game than the first game. And Geno did have protection, and he had that deep ball to Thornton, and I actually put that more on Thornton than I do Geno.
Yeah.
The overthrow. Thornton started looking back at the ball way too early, and that slows you down as a receiver. He had his man beat. If he just keeps running the route the way he should have and then looks up when he's supposed to look up, that's probably a touchdown. But then he's a rookie. He's going to learn. I like the idea of them pushing the ball down the field. I think you have to do that. You got to loosen up the defense. And Geno's proven he's capable of doing that.
Yeah, one person described it to me that they don't think Thornton is as fast out of his initial break as he was in college, and he has all that makeup speed. I don't know if it was a preseason game, if he just wasn't going as fast as he could at top speed there, but I thought he could have got to that ball.
Yeah, I thought so too. I didn't think it was a bad pass by Geno. He could have been a little bit better, but I think I put that more in the receiver than the quarterback.
What's your analysis of Aiden O'Connell and where he stands?
You know, it's actually disappointing. He's looked pretty decent in practice.
Yeah, I tell that.
The two preseason games have surprised me. He's making mistakes he really should not be making in his third year. That interception across the field on third down was just – you just can't do that. I mean, if Cam Miller had thrown that pass, I'd be like, okay, well, he's – you know, it's second game ever as NFL quarterback. But Aiden O'Connell cannot be thrown on that pass. And if he's not – I don't think he's going to get caught by Cam Miller anytime real soon. But, you know, if 8 games into the season he's still doing stuff like that in practice – or in whatever chances he gets in the games, if there's a blowout or whatever, maybe Cam Miller will get a real shot to be the number two.
Wrapping it up with Mark Anderson, I think it's interesting now that this team, I don't think they have the team selected. I don't. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I'm not used to that. And some of the great Raider teams of all time had their teams selected in Santa Rosa before camp started. They just knew who was going to play. There was always some competition, but they were elite championship team. So I'm not knocking Spytek or Carroll for not having their final depth chart or their team perfectly ready to start in New England, but we got to get there pretty quick, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, it's why someone like Kelly's allowed to come from third team to starting corner all of a sudden. Is that the coaches are keeping an open mind, and I think it's Carroll's message to the team, and it's suddenly said from day one that it's going to be about competition, and that shows he's serious. You know, just because Darian Porter is the starting corner for throughout what OTAs and minicamp and in early into training camp doesn't mean he's going to keep it. So I think and we're going back to JPJ. I mean, who would have thought back in minicamp that he would be his starting job would be not only in the line, but at a different position. So, I think it's not a bad thing. And I think there are certain positions you can sort of take into the season and have some competition. I'm with you. It is kind of different. If you're trying to establish a culture, I think that's probably the way you do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think what you said there is really sharp. If he's going to back it up with this competition, there are going to be guys that are pulled from different positions and just don't feel like that's your job. And I clearly think that message was sent throughout camp and OTAs. Finally, you were around the Niners for a couple of days. What do you think of them?
It's hard to know because they're so banged up. Their receiving corps is so decimated. They had 3 more injuries in the preseason game on the offensive side. It's just, I think they're going to be okay, but if they're going to be dealing with injuries all season, and I'm still not sold Brock Purdy can carry a team. Last season was a pretty big wake up call in that regard, that he may not be capable of doing that. So I think he's got to have the talent around him. If they're going to be healthy, if they get healthy and fairly early in the season and can get their full team going, I think they're going to be really dangerous. But, if they keep dealing with these injuries, I think they're going to struggle.
Finally, what do you think the Raiders are going to do in this last preseason game? We don't know. We're going to wait for the coaches to talk later in the week, but I think I've seen enough with Bowers and Genty and Geno. Do you think they'll be real conservative, or there's more competition and a couple of starters will play?
I think my guess is they're going to even keep some guys home, instead of having to make the trip. you know, and really look at the guys down the roster, because they're going to have to make some decisions, as you know, pretty quickly here about, you know, those borderline guys, who's going to make it and who's not. And this is their last real chance to get a look at them. So, you know, maybe they have a starter here and there, but I mean, this is all speculation on my part, no real inside knowledge, but that's my guess, is that's what they're going to do.
Thank you, Mark. Good talking to you. I'll see you this week.
See you. Thanks, Jakey. Appreciate the nighttime words, too.
You got it. Mark Anderson is fantastic. And you just ask him something, and he gives you an honest answer. That's who we put on this show. We put honest people on the show. Bill Williamson, very honest. He always joins us. Everybody. I want information that I can't get you. I can't get you everything. And there's stuff that I can really get that other people can't get, because I can get it from the owner and players, that I don't share on the show because it's not appropriate. So I try to find the halfway point in between by putting on people that are at practice, in the locker room, and they might see something that I don't see. I've always said there's callers who do that too. There are callers who have been around this organization longer than me, and they see certain things that I take very seriously. All right, Pete Carroll's presser. This was Sunday after the game. This was a Zoom between Pete and the media. Here's what he had to say.
Dave, I was curious what your thoughts are on the play of your linebackers and your cornerbacks last night.
I thought the linebackers were really downhill, really aggressive, flashy. I really liked the way those guys played. I thought we took a step forward in the run game and just attacking the line of scrimmage like we want to. We played to the nature of our players, I thought, you know, which was really good. And because we were aggressive and attacking, and it showed up. Gino was on the money. He was right on everything. Tempo was good. I thought Aiden continued to a little bit. We're not quite as fast when he's playing. We don't play as quick to the from huddle to the snap. Still trying to work that out. And you know, made a poor choice on the throw for the pick. Unfortunately, you know, at a crucial time, that was tough. Just the guy was covered, and should if he had to throw it away or take off, we would prefer that.
Hey, Coach. I wanted to ask you about Geno Smith. Back when the two of you were in Seattle, when he was playing backup to Russell Wilson, was there ever a time or like a moment in practice or in the meeting room where you kind of had this idea that if given the opportunity, like he has the last few years he was in Seattle, now in Las Vegas, that he can be this quality star? Was there ever a moment when he was a backup under Russ that you kind of had that kind of gave you that idea that Geno had that potential?
Yeah, I think it was probably in the middle of those first couple of years, you know, and he'd just seen him, you know, maintain the competitive edge, you know, and I mean, because it's kind of hard to believe that a guy could compete like he's going to play. What I keep telling you is that, you know, the very next play he knew he could be in, he seemed like he held on to that long enough to finally just, you know, sensed that and respected that. And his arm talent was always there, you know, the ability to throw and rip the ball. So I was cheerleading for him. And that's kind of when he finally got his chance, I might have been his biggest cheerleader, because he had waited and deserved it. And he came in and played really well and almost won a game that way, and then played well the next couple of weeks. At the time when he finally got his chance and he got out there, he demonstrated it. But you could sense it earlier than that. Just because he was so dedicated, he looked so good in practice all the time.
Pete, obviously your offensive line has been performing well, but there's a clear drop-off between the first and second. I'm just curious how concerned you are about that second-string offensive line, sir.
Well, we're just so young on the second group. It's just going to take time. We feel like we move well. You know, we have good movement by the young guys. They get out of their stance and they get on people well. We're just not as accurate with our calls. We're not as clear with our technique stuff. But that takes time, you know. And so I'm not worried about that. Athletically, we're okay. And we just need to find our consistency. And that's just going to take time. You know, they won't play all at the same time, you know, very often. They'll spot in and all. And they'll have the benefit of guys making – experienced guys making calls around them and helping them play better. So – I think that the individual development is pretty good. As a group, they're still learning. It's going to take a bit.
Coach, going back to the linebackers and cornerbacks real quick, the linebackers are veterans that are just now starting to play with each other, and the cornerbacks are a bunch of young guys. How do you kind of clean up the communication between those guys and those groups so there's no missed assignments or even blown coverages?
Well, we're not blowing coverages. We're not having any major issues in that regard right now, from inside to all the way to the outside. Those guys are doing good. Safeties handle the corners pretty much with their communications. The communication need to continue to grow between the linebackers and the safeties because they're making the calls that really affect the front and all of that in the back end. So I was really fired up about the linebacker play. I mean, it was one guy or the other. It was another guy. Last week it was some different guys, but they're all in the same mode. These guys are very aggressive in the mentality and their style of play. And so we're trying to keep it so that they're not thinking too much so they can cut it loose and really get downhill. Because that was a formidable demonstration of our run defense in the early part of that game when the starters were all in there. And we have three or four guys that were contributing to that. I think that's what we'll hold on to. That's what we want to look like.
Coach, in your book, Win Forever, you quote Bill Walsh talking about quarterbacks, how the most important thing that he looks for is that they can throw a catchable ball. And yep. I'm curious if that's still like a core filter in your mind. And if so, how Geno has embodied that in your view.
Yeah. I appreciate you doing the research. Yeah, I think Bill really cut it down to the very, most important aspect of it is just when the guy throws the ball, do they catch it? And so what he meant by that wasn't that you throw it easy or soft to the guys. It means you put it in the right place, you give them the advantage of their positioning with the defense, and you make opportunity available. I mean, Geno, what we see, the combination of Geno and Brock Bowers, Brock is so adept at making throws look like they're exactly the right throw by the way he moves. Well, that's even a step further, than what Coach Walsh was talking about. But it is, I think it's really important. You have to, a guy can throw the ball really hard, he can throw it really far, and all that kind of stuff. It looks pretty doing it. But if the ball isn't placed where the guys can make their plays on it, then he won't be very effective. So Geno has all of that knack, and you see him throw the ball down the field really well as well. And our top guys, Jacoby and Brock, and they're taking advantage of that, making it look easy almost. And so I think that's really what Coach was talking about.
Pete, we're a little bit over a week away from roster cutdown day. Just in the past in your career, and I don't know, maybe you change your philosophy since you've been away, but how collaborative is that process between, yourself, the assistant coaches, the front office, kind of coming together to figure out how you're going to build this roster?
Yeah, it is. We take everybody's input. We don't want to miss a trick here. So that means that everybody that sees something got to speak it and let us know whether it's positive or not, and then John and I are, positioned to go ahead and make the decisions based off the information that everybody gives us. So I'm really encourage our guys to speak up, not just, defer to somebody else's opinion. I want to hear what they say, and we don't hold anything against them. They can say whatever they want, and then we'll make use of the information. That's really the way we've been doing it for a long time, and whomever I'm working with. And John and I worked real hard so that we're prepared to use each other's experience and expertise and all that to make the best choices possible.
Pete, you had mentioned yesterday that Jackson Powers Johnson remains in a competition at right guard. Curious your thoughts of his performance last night, but also with Alex missing about a week now or so in a couple of games, are you getting to that crunch time where you got to get him out on the field to give him a fair chance to also compete for this job?
Well, we can't do any more than his injury allows, so we got to wait it out. We got a couple good weeks here, and I know he's feeling way better. But when he gets his chances, he's going to have to make the most of them. JPJ's, getting more comfortable. He continues to be really physical at the spot, and he's a strong and powerful guy. So he's making progress. Jordan is really holding on to his spot. I really like him playing there for us. I think he helps everybody. And that's a real positive aspect of your front play when your center can really communicate and be consistent and be on point all the time. So, but we'll, as soon as Alex is ready to go, he'll be battling again and getting jumped back in there. But I don't know when that's going to be.
Pete, I thought Darian Porter had a really, really impressive rep in punt coverage last night. Anybody that saw him at Iowa State knows that he's capable of that and knows what he can do on special teams. But I guess I was just curious your thoughts on that play. And then also, if he does have a very large role on defense, are you still comfortable with him playing a large role on special teams too?
Yes, for sure. He has to play on teams and all of that. All of our DBs have to be involved there. He is really technique solid, man. He has really picked up on the things that we've asked to emphasize, and he looks sweet, you know, for his first time around. He just needs more plays. He just needs to be out there making more hits and tackles and finishing plays off. You know, they're few and far between for the corners, and you got to be ready when the moment arises. But he's been really solid now, and I've been really impressed. What's happened is Kai Blue's really made the push now. You know, he's really come on, and he's done a really nice job and played well again last night, yesterday, and he's aggressive and comfortable and making things happen. So he's just making it a great competition for guys. D-Cam did a nice job again, played good, solid football. Corners are doing fine, and we just need more opportunities for playmaking. We're playing a lot of zone. Ball's getting inside a lot. Niners throw the ball over the football a lot, so those guys weren't able to be as involved. But Stokes, he's doing a good job. I really like the development of these guys, and they're going to get better as we move forward.
Pete, as you approach the final preseason game, not specific to this year, but in general, how many over the years would you say average legitimate spots are open going into that last game on your 53 man? I mean,
I don't know the number of that to tell you, but it's still, there's no reason to, we don't have to declare anything in a hurry. You know, let's take in all the information that we can and and that gives the guys the best chance to keep battling, you know, and as they battle, they push the guys that are ahead, and we just get better in that. So we won't make any decisions this week, you know, about what's final and all. We're looking at it though. You know, we have a big meeting coming up this afternoon that will take in everything, all the input up to this point. And then we'll go into this final week with a real thought of, you know, guys having to get their opportunities and show what they can do, and hopefully they'll be able to do that. I'm rooting for everybody, you know. I'm cheerleading for everybody that's got a shot here, and I want to make sure that we give them a legitimate chance to show that. So this is an interesting game because some guys have solidified their positions and others haven't, and so we'll just work our way through it and keep the competition theme going.
Yeah, that's a really good press conference. There's still about 5 minutes left, but I wanted you to hear a piece of it with Pete Carroll. Very calm, everything's good, competition. So I think he's very honest about the play, special teams. It's very important that the Raiders are great this year on punt coverage and kickoff coverage. They want to make the other team, the opponent, go as far as they possibly can. Okay, we need to flip the field here and make it very difficult for an opposing quarterback that has to go over 80 yards. It's hard to do that in football anymore. They took the foot out of football. So the kickoffs are lame. It's lame. These kickoffs are a joke. Okay, the league took the kickoffs away. We were getting sick and tired of the ball going in the end zone, and you get it at the 20. I get it. Maybe if the ball goes out of the end zone or the back of the end zone, you put it at the 30. But you let these special teams get after each other. You let the kickoff coverage team have a running start. They took that out. They line them up in a phone booth. Nothing happens. Little to nothing. I've done this enough now to tell you, little to nothing's happened. And they're spinning it that it's going to be safer. It's not going to be safer. You could always spin that it's safe or not. It's harder to call penalties because it's so locked in. I just don't like it. And I'm going to stay with that. And then secondly, A.J. Cole, who I think the world of. His coffin corners, the ones that go inside the five, we really need to see that this year because he's elite. He's not good. He's elite. And if AJ can put the ball inside the 10 more often, which means it goes out of bounds inside the 10, and then the other team's got to go 80 or 90 yards, that's a big deal. That's a really big deal because we don't want to give short fields up with a young secondary. You want the secondary to have the ability to make plays and not play on a short field. Chris Bumbaka will join us from USA Today. We'll go around the league. I thought it was a pretty good weekend. Caleb Williams looked great. For everybody who talks about the Bears and him not being ready to play, I thought he had the best week, too, in the entire NFL. Aiden gets a clean snap. Is he looking deep? Aiden's going to have to get rid of the ball. He does get it out. Nice catch for a first down. Again, the Raiders and Jack Besh, nice job coming back to the ball, EA overall. And Aiden stayed in that pocket late, and he's going to go. One of Aiden's good throws in the game. JT, back with you as we continue on. Coming off week two of the NFL, even though there was a game when we were in Canton, Ohio, that I don't get into too much. Chris Bumbaka joins us. Great job as an insider for USA Today. Chris, from what I saw, Caleb Williams looked really good. 97 yards on that drive. Pitch and catch, open receivers. His body language was great. I think Bears fans got to be thrilled with that performance.
Hey, JT, thanks so much for having me on, man. Always great to be with you. But yeah, I agree. Bears fans have to be ecstatic. Why wouldn't you be? Now, not to be the Debbie Downer here, this is just preseason week two. Can he do it in week one? Can he do it in week 12? Can he do it, heaven forbid, for the Bears? Wild card weekend. We'll see. But, no, it's a great start. So all you can do is play the schedule in front of you, right? We're sounding like the athletes we cover. But, hey, all you can ask for if you're a Bears fan. And, yeah, I think I thought he looked comfortable. I thought he looked good.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about here. Who looked good? I thought Jackson Dart's interesting. I don't think he's prepared to play week one in a real NFL game. But Russell Wilson, we're not seeing a lot from him. And Dart is stealing all the headlines in the media market of New York, New Jersey here. What do you think of his performance?
Yeah, Dart is fitting in way better than I thought he would in terms of the media market of New York, New Jersey. I kind of like that personality shining through. But, yeah, I think right now the numbers are a little bit inflated, the statistics, just because it's a lot more screen happy for him. It's a lot more easy pitch and catch than maybe what Russell's trying to develop in Brian Daboll's scheme. So, again, preseason, can't read too much into everything. But, yeah, I think if you're a Giants fan, you got to like the start here. It's always good to see confidence, right? It's always good to see it going better than worse in the beginning. So, yeah, I think it's a good start.
Chris Bumbaka is our guest. I haven't seen much nationally of Cam Ward. I know there's mixed reviews. I mean, he's going to play. A lot of rookies don't get that. They're not automatically named the starter. But the number one pick overall will be the starter there. How does he look so far? What does that look like on tape?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's been an abbreviated preseason kind of run for him. Like, he only played a couple series Friday night. But I think it's been a decent start for him. I don't think he has a lot to work with in terms of like the Titans receiver room. I mean, some people were saying that the Titans have like a top five room in the league, and I just categorically disagree with that. You know, maybe Calvin Ridley shows up a little bit, but and helps him out. But I think, you know, really the main thing there is going to be patience, right? The Titans probably aren't going to do much this year, but I like Cam Ward kind of for your fantasy guys out there. You know, maybe as a fantasy option down the line later this season. I think between the athleticism, he didn't run a ton at Miami, but I think as he gets going here in the NFL, he'll realize that 8 to 10 yards on the ground is better than trying to throw a guy open, and he'll start taking advantage of that. So I think it's going to be a good transition for him. Again, like another guy who's played a lot of college ball. You think of a guy like Jaden Daniels. You think of a guy like Joe Burrow, guys who had success quickly when they got into the league because of that college experience. So I think that's only going to help him. But I think his supporting cast is definitely lacking. I like what they did on the offensive line during the offseason. Kevin Zeitler there is like huge to help establish a pocket. I think he's like one of the best, or at least most underrated offensive linemen in the league. So, you know, I think one step at a time there for Brian Callahan, Cam Ward, and the Tennessee Titans.
Chris Mumbaka, USA Today Sports. Ashton Jeanty ran hard, had a touchdown and a big run. That's what the Raiders wanted him to do. He did not avoid contact. He was looking for contact. And Geno Smith hit Brock Bowers on a really nice pass. Are you optimistic that the Raider offense can protect Geno and move the ball here in Vegas?
Yeah, I think so. I think Geno's going to find himself in comfortable situations. He's back with Pete Carroll. Pete knows what Geno likes. Geno knows what Pete wants to see out of him. I think that's easy enough right there. And then Jeanty, yeah, had that nice truck stick for the first down last night. Good to see him running hard. I don't know if I would have said what he said post-game about him arriving. Maybe pump the brakes a little bit there. But, yeah, 33 yards on 7 carries and his first unofficial touchdown a week after being held to negative yardage. That's encouraging signs, uptick. And the Raiders offense with Brock Bowers and Geno, that could be a nice combination there.
No Aaron Rodgers for Pittsburgh in this game. What do you sense here, what they're trying to do with him, get him used to this offense here in practice? Because we're not going to see much of him. No need to see him the following week here. So he's going to have to hit the ground running with all the experience he has and the fact that he is healthy.
Yeah, all these teams are kind of hyping up their joint practices as these like quasi-scrimmages. I'm not sure how much I'm buying that right now. I mean, it's such a different atmosphere when you're out on a practice field compared to in a stadium with fans and more referees and things like that. So I don't put too much stock into the joint practices as some of these NFL teams appear to. And I think that's kind of the route that the Steelers went with Rodgers and such, and you saw it with other quarterbacks across the league. But, yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things where they're really relying on his brain, right? They're relying on the football genius of Aaron Rodgers to get up to speed and to be able to execute Arthur Smith's offense the way he wants to. And, from a mental component, Aaron Rodgers hasn't given us any reason to think that he won't be able to do that. Can his legs get there? Can his arm get there? That remains to be seen. I'm interested to see how he kind of meshes with this Steelers offense. I was reading today Ben Solak from ESPN's report from training camp, and I thought it was really interesting. He had this anecdote about how Rodgers was really laying into second-year wideout Roman Wilson. It's another thing where are the weapons there? Is there enough for him to work with? I'm not totally convinced about the Steelers roster just in general, especially on the offensive side of the ball, even along the offensive line, which is going to be paramount to keeping him upright. And an upright Rodgers is the only way that the Steelers get over the hump of their, middling wild card success, if you want to call it that. I know Mike Tomlin probably would.
Chris Mumbaka, as we wrap it up from USA Today, let's talk about some of the players still holding in. Terry McLaurin at $18 million, he definitely deserves more money. I thought he had all the leverage because Jaden Daniels has a 91 total QBR thrown to him last year. You cannot slow down Jaden Daniels coming off an NFC Championship game appearance, but it seems like the Commanders are playing hardball with the money here. What are you hearing?
They definitely are, and it's really coming to a head. It's interesting. They activated him off the PUP list on Saturday, and I felt like that was them kind of cashing in a chip that they still had in their back pocket, but it was their way of saying, hey, let's get this ball moving here. You're healthy. We're not going to use the system here to protect you anymore as we're negotiating a deal, and he's been around the team. He's still there, but he wants that $30 million number, right, the DK Metcalf area. They were in the same draft class, but McLaurin's a little bit older. And, yeah, he's got the unfortunate distinction of having an age that begins with the number 3. That's just going to go against you in these contract talks. But like you were saying, JT, the connection between he and Jaden was just felt so pure, looked so good in Daniels' rookie season that I find it hard to believe that the Commanders are putting up this much of a fight. Now, maybe they just really don't want to get to that $30 million number for whatever reason. But Daniels is on his rookie deal. I mean, I feel like they kind of have the flexibility to do this now. I know they brought in Debo Samuel, but, whether Debo gives you the same kind of deep threat that McLaurin does, I think McLaurin's a better deep ball receiver personally, and that was one area that the Commanders wanted to get better at this offseason, and they just haven't been able to do it in training camp because McLaurin hasn't been on the field. So how much of that's going to impact Daniels and his sophomore season? I think that the Commanders just in general, maybe might not get to that 12-win total just because they're going to have a harder schedule with how they finished last year and, you know, the second-place teams that they're going to face. But, it's just not a good situation for them right now.
And then the final two, Micah Parsons now requesting a trade, $24 million on the fifth-year option. I really believe this, and I know Jerry's even on record calling it a soap opera, and with the Netflix documentary, everything out there now, I really believe for the first time in a long time that Jerry is playing the crowd with this Cowboy documentary and the Cowboy noise, because this puts in jeopardy Parsons. I wouldn't play him in the Philadelphia game. No chance. It's too soon. And to tell your team you're going into Philadelphia, the reigning world champs, and Micah Parsons won't be ready health-wise and ramped up to play in that game, what does that say to the rest of the roster?
I mean, it's a terrible message, right? But it's the same message that's been sent over the past few seasons. You saw it with CeeDee Lamb. You saw it with Dak Prescott. I mean, it's different because Prescott was always going to play the opener week one last year against the Browns. But Jerry loves strolling into the stadium after that deal gets announced a couple hours before kickoff, and he thinks that he owns the headlines now and whatever. And that's what he wants to do Thursday night, September 4th in Philadelphia. He wants to announce a Parsons deal, stroll into the stadium. The gaggle of media follows him in the tunnels and this and that, and he gets to hold court. He thinks that that still matters. But what matters is winning football games. What matters is putting your team in the best position to contend, which his teams have not done for 30 years. So I think you'd think that Jerry learned a lesson by now, but he clearly is just all in on this entertainment aspect, as you kind of alluded to there. And it's hurt his football team, and it's going to hurt his football team in 2025.
Then finally, Trey Hendrickson. Look, for Joe Burrow, he's very vocal about his offensive players. And obviously, he's staying up and standing up for Trey here. But this is also getting really risky because we know Mike Brown typically doesn't pay. And he just paid T. Higgins and Jamar Chase. What do you think's happening here now, too? Because it seems like the trade options are real. There was a report earlier today just on the internet that the Eagles would look at this. This could be a big move in hindering Joe Burrow to have an opportunity to win a championship if they don't get this deal done.
Yeah, I think the Bengals' deep postseason run kind of hinges on Hendrickson being able to provide that really essential pass rush off the edge there that he's been so successful at throughout his entire time in Cincinnati, but particularly over the last two seasons. Now, Trey, happened to be at Bengals camp the day that he showed up, which was interesting to cover and experience. But I will say this, that I feel like out of all the names we've kind of thrown out here, he feels like the guy who's most likely to be traded. Where that is, I don't really know. You mentioned the Eagles, how he's always going to have his hat in the ring for these kind of guys, right, to take his roster to the next level, and nobody's more creative about making the money work. And, I feel like that's just an indictment on teams like the Bengals, on owners like Mike Brown, who, for whatever reason, maybe their reasons are justified, and I'm not a financial expert here, but I did see that although the Bengals might be the least valuable NFL franchise, I think it's still somewhere over $5 billion. I look at that and I can't believe that owners won't do what they can to put successful teams out there, or the most successful teams that they possibly can. And Trey Hendrickson being there is a good thing for the Bengals. And if they want to go in a different direction, then more power to them. That's why they drafted Shamar Stewart. Oh, wait, they had issues with him too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, now it just becomes, like I said, indictments on organizations and things like that. So will Hendrickson be there for the Bengals week one? I'm more inclined to say no, honestly.
Thanks, Chris. We really enjoy having you on every couple of weeks. You bring a lot to the show. Thanks for doing this.
Always great to be on with you, JT. Let's talk soon.
You got it. Chris Bumbaca, USA Today. Nice to get those interviews because we do a national show at night. Some of those I'm able to play. Kind of takes a little edge off. We got an interview that we can have on two shows. He's good. And the three main guys holding out are significant. These are all great players. Terry McLaurin, Trey Hendrickson, and Micah Parsons. And what a shame that Micah Parsons on his fifth year can't get a deal done. Can't get a deal done, and Jerry hasn't been yet. Jerry's worried about tomorrow night. They already had the blue carpet, not the red, the blue carpet for the Netflix series. And then coming up next will be the show, which I believe debuts tomorrow on Netflix, which you'll watch. It should be exciting. Emmett Smith's involved, Deion Sanders, Jimmy Johnson, Troy Aikman, all the people that covered the Cowboys back in the day, including Skip Bayless, who's pretty much been out of the out of all media since then. All right, one more segment to go before Q comes up. This week we have a four-show week because Friday we head with the Raiders out to Glendale, Arizona for the final preseason game. And then after that, it's Labor Day and we're back and the Raiders open up in New England. So a lot more to get through summertime radio right here on the flagship of the Raiders.
Scotty Scheffler, 82 feet from the hole. He's off the green left in the rough. Lifts this out of the rough, onto the putting surface. Now bringing it down the slope towards the hole. Slowly moving, now picking up speed. That's getting close to the hole now. Picking up speed, getting close. Scotty Scheffler, and that is right near it in. He made it. Chip and birdie. Oh, my goodness. Do you believe it? Scotty Scheffler. Birdies. Hole out. 17. 15 under.
And Scotty Scheffler, BMW, he should be the golfer of the year. I don't know how they have this stupid FedEx point system. So if he loses next week, he's not the champ in Eastlake. Give me a break. He's the best golfer by far. You know, Scotty Scheffler, if you look back at his career, I think that's his 17th or 18th win. He has a lot of great shots, but never an iconic shot. That's the one. That chip in that gave him the ability to put that tournament away, late in a tournament, chipping it in out of the rough. That's an iconic moment. Tiger's had many more. Many more, but Scotty's had great. You know, a lot of times Scotty doesn't need to chip in because he's 6 feet away. He'll just make the putt and win and go on and get a birdie. But that was incredible, and it was fun to watch there. JT, back with you. Thanks to Bobby for putting the show together. Mark Anderson, Chris Bumbaca. Q's coming up next. My son is texting me that Summerlin South, 0-0 in the sixth, if I got this right. Last licks before extra innings are getting no hit in the Little League World Series. So I don't have it on here, so I need an update on that. I'll get it for you before I get out of here. But we want Summerlin South. That's the league my kids played in here, right up the street from the house. Two outs and no score, and we'll see what happens here. But this Little League World Series is fun. The Mets with it, 2-2. Okay, 2-2, two outs. Okay, so we're going to get an update here and find out what the deal is here. Bobby, if you can come over here quickly and grab the remote so I can do this the right way. Summerlin South should be on here. So it's 2-2 count, no score. South Carolina pitcher is pitching a no-hitter right here. So here we go. I got it. Thank you, Bobby. Bottom of the sixth, and there you go. They got out of the inning with a no-hitter. Nevada is being no-hit. The good news is South Carolina's got no runs. Man, this kid pitching for South Carolina looks like he's 29 years old. He's just throwing smoke. So we'll keep an eye on this. Hopefully it just takes me a few moments to get home. We can watch this extra inning game. Do they do the lame stuff that we do in major leagues and put a ghost runner on second base in the World Series? And that's a big topic that I'll have tonight on the national show. There looks like there's going to be realignment in Major League Baseball coming up where they're going to put teams in certain regions. I've said this since I got in radio, and I'll say it until I'm done with radio and they take me off the air. Stop touching my sports. Stop touching sports. Baseball's been around well over 150 years. Stop messing with it, Commissioner Manfred. So what are you going to do? You're going to put Seattle, the A's, the Dodgers, the Padres, you're going to put them all in one region. Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Washington, Philly in another region. No, leave it alone. The National League and the American League have had great rivalries for a long time. Don't take the rivalries away. Now, one of the things the commissioner said, it would be easy on the players with travel. What? They fly on private charters. They stay at the Four Seasons. All their meals are prepared for in the ballroom. They have buffets after the game. They have luxury buses with police escorts take them to the airport. And we're really worried about the travel for the players? Come on. You got to be kidding me here. So we're going to see what's going to happen here. South Carolina and Nevada, the winner will go into the semifinal bracket here of the USA bracket. So a lot of fans optimistic that they can get it done here. Baseball, again, the Dodgers swept the Padres. Padres got to look in the mirror. They'll be playing the Dodgers one more time at Petco. The place will be packed with Dodger fans. Because Dodger fans know how to get into Petco. That'll be interesting to see there. Listen to Q, as always. If you miss any portion of the show, you can find it at lvsportsnetwork.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel for free. We're trying to get to 10,000 subscribers. That takes work. And it's all free. All you got to do is click on a button. If you can do that for me, we appreciate that and share it with everybody else. JT the Brick, YT, that's where you'll find that on YouTube. Mad Dog Sports Radio tonight, 7 to 10 on Sirius XM Channel 82. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.